Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back. NQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC 258, our main event. It's got the UFC welterweight title on the line. It is Kamaru, the Nigerian Nightmare Usman, taking on, I don't even know if to say former training partner, current training partner, except for this fight, teammate, ATT teammate, and rising welterweight contender, Gilbert Dorinho Burns. I'm your host, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, going to break this thing down and all the other fights on UFC 258 with the co-host, the analyst, the important guys on the show, Chris Olsen, Joe, better known as Sun Tzu. Guys, you ready to shell out $60 for UFC 258?
Oh, am I ever ready? I would add with Kamaru Usman, not only former or current, whatever you want to say, training partner, but former corner man. He's actually cornered Gilbert Burns in some fights. So a really interesting dynamic here. Really looking forward to this fight. We had a couple fights fall out that makes this card way less exciting. Not only did Bobby Green just fall out after collapsing in the back, we hope he's okay, but also earlier in the week, the bigger blow, Jimmy Rivera, that rematch fell out. That was going to be a banger with Pedro Munhoz. But we still have some interesting fights to talk about, and I am excited about it. So let's get it going.
Joe, well, I think two women's fights, Joe. I want fire from you on this
three.
Card.
Three women's fights.
Which one am I forgetting about?
I don't know.
Who did I forget about?
So you got Viana, you got Barber, you got Grasso. Well,
I forgot about the co-main event. I was thinking of the scrub women's fights because they're going to be big DFS plays.
So actually, I like this camp change for Kamaru. I mean, yeah, he's always had good cardio, and I think this is only going to help. So as for paying the $60, thankfully I have a few bucks in my pocket from last week, so I can actually fork this over for the pay-per-view, although it is honestly one of the weaker pay-per-views. Like, I don't know, like the UFC should be a little ashamed of themselves. You know, you got a main event, and then look, I love Grasso as much, probably for not the same reasons, but I love Grasso a lot, and that's not a co-main. I mean, geez, come on. I mean, there have been better fight night cards. Yeah, take the main away. So yeah, it's $60. It's tough. I mean, maybe it doesn't even do 100,000 buys. And I wonder how many people that don't have anything live going into the main card are going to actually pay the $60 to watch it. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's, Dana White will be on the hunt for those streamers. That's probably going to be the most popular way to watch this card, quite honestly.
Right.
If you don't know, I mean, Chris covered pretty well. We lost Jimmy Rivera and
Webin. Oh, no, you're good. A little bit of lag, but you're good, yeah.
Yep. We lost Jimmy Rivera and Pedro Munhoz, and today we lost Jim Miller and Bobby Green. So 11 fights on this card. Let's dig right – and before we dig right into it, make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Like, comment, subscribe to the podcast, RotoWire or RotoWire MMA on YouTube, iTunes, all that good stuff. Let's get into the fights. Oh, I didn't do the shout-out. If you didn't hear, he alluded to it, but he didn't mention it. Joe took down the big GPP last week and only split it a couple ways. I think it was about 40 grand in his pocket. So congratulations. And a lot of that was the women's MMA, you know, gold that was on the optimal lineup. So I'm hoping lightning strikes twice. I'm praying you're on the same two I am.
Yeah. Hashtag tight. You know, I mean, I could, my night could have ended really early. I had like 96% Odie Osborne, and
his ownership was dumb.
I just played an incredibly tight core, and it happened to work out for me. I mean, honestly, that's why I had that lineup with Marquez that won it for me. But, you know, you're really in an interesting spot when you know going into the last fight, you know, not only knowing the outcome, but knowing the exact number of points you need. Like, knowing that you need Volkov to score 97 points for you to share the top prize with three other people. Oh, and by the way, I also was in the second iteration of that contest, you know, and ended up splitting that with three other people. Or two other people. So it was all good. And those were the only two contests I played in that lineup.
It worked out big night. And you know what?
Yeah.
Heaters are real. And let's get to it this week.
Yep.
First up, women's fight. Miranda Maverick at 8,500, taking on Jillian Robertson at 7,700. The line on this fight, Maverick -135, Robertson +115. I say it every time. I've always been a fan of Jillian Robertson for whatever reason. I like that pressure wrestling style, and she's more experienced. I think I'm taking Jillian Robertson before I kick it to Joe, because I like to get my bias out of the way. My worry is if Miranda Maverick is significantly stronger than her, it's probably going to be an issue. It's ever end up in top control. So I have Robertson close fight. I think the line should be flipped, so I like the dog here, but it's a close fight. Joe, women's MMA analyst, kick us off this week.
Yeah, so look, there's some line value in Robertson. I won't say that there isn't. Miranda Maverick looked really good in her UFC debut, but let's be really honest. I mean, she was lobbed a softball in her first fight. Made it pretty easy. Won that fight on a doctor stoppage. There's a little bit of recency bias there. You know, prior to that, she had a decision against Pearl Gonzalez, and then, you know, she rear naked choked out Deanna Bennett. Took her three rounds to do it. Deanna Bennett is, you know, her best days are behind her. So, look, I was a big advocate of the UFC signing Maverick. I think she's a really good fighter. I just see paths to victory here for Robertson. Now, the one thing to worry about with Robertson is she gets discouraged if the fight doesn't play out her way. And that's been her trademark. Like, she gets really down. She needs her coaches to stay on her. I think Maverick's path to victory here is to just bum rush her and just be constantly pressuring her and not letting her do what she does best, which is essentially, you know, get it on the ground and look for a sub. So I am also, just based on the line value here, you know, going to pick Robinson for DraftKings. You know, again, we're looking for dogs. I think a lot of people are going to be playing Stars and Scrubs this week in DraftKings. So I like Robertson, but in case, you know, Maverick does get up early and has that pressure game going, I think you need to have shares of Maverick as well. But I'll make my official pick Jillian Robertson.
Yes, I like it. Yes. Chris, who you got?
I forgot to put Joe in the single, and in the interest of consistency, I didn't do it, but I will do it for everybody else going forward.
Self-righteous, want your big ass face up there.
That's all right.
Yeah. Mine has to go first, and then you guys can eat. But But yeah, actually, Sean, I see the fight playing out the way you fear that it plays out, which is I think Maverick is just going to be stronger than her here. And Jillian Robertson fights are very binary. She either gets her wrestling going or she doesn't, and when she doesn't, she loses lopsided fights. I think that this is going to be the case here. I think she can very much do what Talia Santos did and stick her on the ground and out-scramble her if it does come to that. We've seen her out-scrambled before. We saw her out-scrambled by Maya Bueno Silva, which led to an armbar. I don't actually think she's the most talented grappler in the division. I just think when she faces lesser grapplers, she makes it look really easy. And that is what she has been facing recently. I share Joe's sentiment that we're hunting for dogs, and so you have to have shares of Robertson because, as I said, they're binary. So if she does win, she's going to win big. But I think that Maverick is just going to shut her out here. And for that reason, I like Maverick quite a bit.
Quick final point, guys. Of the three female fights that I'm going to be selecting, that we're all going to be selecting, it's this matchup that I have the least amount of conviction on. So take that for what it's worth. I'm picking Robertson mainly due to line value, mainly as a DraftKings play. But like, I would not be surprised if it plays out the way Chris sees it. And Maverick just gets a lead early and just puts pressure on her. And Jillian gets discouraged, like what happened with Macy Barber, and just kind of folds under pressure. So I would not be surprised to see that happen. It's not a pick without risk.
I have one dog I really like to build off of what Chris said. So spoiler coming. I don't think I'm going to be very – it'll be GPP popular, but I don't think it's straight-up pick popular. And for Joe, the teaser – the second, not the co-main event, the other women's fight, I have a really strong conviction. And if you're not on the same side as me, I'm going to be terrified. Terrified.
Okay, let's see.
Next fight up, though, before we can get to that, we have Ricky Simone at 9,100 taking on Brian Kelleher at 7,100. Line on this fight, Ricky Simone is minus 245. Kelleher is plus 205. Look, I'm going to do my breakdown super simple because it's basically Kelleher's dead unless he gets a submission or fluky catches Simone coming in a la Uriah Faber. And then you go into, okay, that's fine. That's the fight breakdown. I'll hedge with a little bit of Kelleher in case, but can you really afford Ricky Simone with Kamaru Usman and all these other 9K fighters? I think that's really what we need to get at in the breakdown. Chris, you're up.
Yeah, I agree. I think that especially now, Kelleher has shown in the last couple fights, especially the last one with Ray Rodriguez, but also too with Odie Osborne to a certain extent, that he has made his takedown defense more so, I'm going to hunt my guillotine because I'm really good at it. And so, look, Ricky Simone can get his head stuck in there. That can happen. So, like you said, you can go for that, and you can have a couple shares of Kelleher. I think that the pace and pressure of Simone is going to be different, and it's going to overwhelm a guy like Kelleher. Now to the point of, can you fit him in? I think you can. I think we've seen in the past couple weeks with this scoring system, and last week especially, I feel like the wrestlers and grapplers are really going to pay big dividends with the new scoring system. We see it over and over again now. Even with wrestlers and grapplers who aren't, weren't prolific scorers at all, last time are really coming through big now. So yes, I think you can afford Ricky. I think the rinse and repeat takedowns can still lead to about 5 or 6 minutes of control time at least. And if you're looking at that, you're looking at a big score, even if it goes to a decision, which is basically what he does. I mean, I know he got a finish the last time out, but yeah, that's the breakdown. I mean, I wouldn't count Kelleher out because, you know, he's still a tricky grappler. He can get it there. He can land some punches. He does have a good takedown defense. I think it's in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. So he does have his paths here, but I think the pace and pressure of Simone are just going to be too much, and I'm picking Simone.
You know, one thing to hit on that you kind of brushed on, but I think it's important. You said wrestler's been coming up big. With the new scoring system, and I need another couple weeks of data, and I'm probably going to write something, I think we need to start adjusting in our mind what a big score is, because scores are up all over the place, because you have non-significant strikes are 0.2. So whether they're in the cage doing that slap you against the rib stomp or the foot stomp or on the ground, the little stuff on, like, scores everywhere are just up. So I yes, the control time is helping wrestlers, exaggerating it a little bit. But when you're looking at game logs, like, 80 is not what it used to be. Like, all those Bilal Muhammad 80s that used to be, they're even up in the 90s now. Like, I think 90 is the new 80 for DFS, and just start getting used to seeing 700 and change win fights.
But it's also like it all goes together, doesn't it? So, like, when you're talking about non-significant strikes, the people who are most apt to get those are wrestlers because they're on the ground, or people who tie you up in the clinch or whatever.
Yes, the scoring system does help, but in terms of coming through big, if you start looking, it just for people's brains, like, 80 isn't a great score anymore, was a great score. It was a good score. Well, it kind of sucks now. I think 80 is now 70. So, Joe, who do you got for this fight?
So, I'm really tired of hearing about the narrative around Ricky Simon losing to Uriah Faber. Okay, so that was not a good loss, but let's look at a little bit of the backstory. I mean, I believe Ricky Simon was, like, on his way to his honeymoon, you know, when he took that fight. So, okay, he got flash finished in that fight, but what he did against Ray Borg was truly impressive. I think Kelleher is going to be a popular pick. He's kind of a polarizing figure. He does a lot of, you know, work on social media. You know, you have him on, you know, YouTube videos a lot. I mean, he's just a really all around good dude, and he does have that wicked guillotine. But we've seen guys like Jackson, you know, just piece him up. I see this fight. Simone, he needs to, you know, have good fight IQ. He keeps this fight standing, and I think he can actually get a finish against Kelleher. Do not follow him to the ground. Do not put yourself in harm's way, which I know is easier said than done. But I think he's got the strength and the power to make that happen. So I like Ricky Simon a fair bit here. I will have shares of Kelleher in GPPs, but I do like Simon here to get the win.
All right, next fight up. Oh, good. A narrative I'm sick of talking about. Chris Gutierrez, 8,400, taking on Andre Yule at 7,800. Line on this fight, newest fight on the card, week old. Super short notice for Gutierrez. Yule was supposed to fight Stamen last week. That gets pulled off. Gutierrez on short notice is the favorite, -135. Comeback on Yule is +115. Yule, six-inch reach advantage. Somehow Andre Yule is a higher pace striker in a fight. And everyone I hear is talking about Chris Gutierrez and the leg kicks. I get it. He had scored a bunch of points via leg kicks against Vince Morales. That could be a tool for him in this fight for sure. Yule is open to it, but do not game log chase three leg kick knockdowns. Like, go ahead, play Gutierrez. I think Yule's the one with upside, especially in a place where we're hunting for underdogs. Like, if you flip these salaries, I probably fade the whole fight. At this salary, I'll have a little bit of Andre Yule. He's my pick to win. Joe.
So it's really interesting, and I would encourage you guys to listen to, you know, Brett Apley's take on this. He made a few really good points on how, you know, this fight and how the style of Andre Yule and how he lines up, he's not going to be as susceptible to leg kicks as Morales was when he got finished by leg kicks. Interesting take. Look, Gutierrez is the younger fighter. He's 29 years old. He actually lands more leg kicks than he does headshots, which is kind of interesting. And that's another, I know I plagiarized that from someone, so apologies. I can't recall who, but that's an interesting stat in its own right. He's got a 3-fight winning streak. Again, younger guy by 4 years. Yule can play to his reach. I really honestly don't know what to do here. I know that Gutierrez trains at altitude, so I would hope that his cardio is in line. I guess, and I think this is this a catchweight fight? It's 140. It's a catchweight fight. So this is a catchweight fight. You know, the 5 extra pounds probably going to help out. These are both pretty big guys. I was going to say probably help out Yule a little more, but Gutierrez is 5'9". What is Yule? Yule is about 6 feet tall. I think, you know, the extra 5 pounds. No, actually, he's 5'8". Okay. So I don't know who the extra 5 pounds is going to help. Probably both these guys, so they're not going to have to cut as much. I guess I'm going to pick Gutierrez here. You know, both fighters coming off of win streaks. At 33 years old, I just don't know where the upside is for, you know, for Andre Yule. You know, MMA record 17-6. I mean, if he fights at range, he could win the fight. I don't know that I see this being all that exciting. I could see this as a pretty low scoring fight, which is what I'm probably going to be banking on. I can't see myself having a lot of this fight, more now that we have lost two fights. But like when we had a full 13 fight slate, I was not really circling this fight as one that I was going to have a lot of.
No.
So I guess I'll take Gutierrez here, but it's kind of a weak pick.
Yeah, I've got Yule at dog pricing, which is my only point why I'm going to get some. And I am leaning that way.
I get it.
Generally.
I get it.
Chris, who you got?
Yeah, I like Andre Yule a lot. I just like his style as the boxer who is, you know, can really fight at range and is quick and has a little bit of power, a little bit of sneaky power. But I am I'm picking Gutierrez here.
Oh, good. I feel better.
I saved Sean. I had to get him on the edge of his seat for a minute. But I'm gonna do something at my own peril and kind of disagree with the great Brett Apley, which is to say I think the leg kicks are kind of gonna be there in good supply just because of how heavy Yule stands on that lead leg. I think that the fight could be a little higher scoring just because of the pace that Yule keeps. He tends to draw exciting fights out of his opponents, but as we know, the significant strikes are less, and they're going to spend a lot of time at range here. We have seen Gutierrez wrestle a little bit more lately, and he could do that just because we've seen that Yule can't stop a takedown. But, you know, we'll have to see. I agree that I'm not going to have much of this on DraftKings, but I just think as Gutierrez, as the cleaner kickboxer, even though there's going to be a pretty pronounced reach disadvantage for Gutierrez, even though he's an inch taller, which is a strange tale that's taped there. But I'm going to go with Gutierrez. I think that I might dog or pass it a little bit. I'm sure I'll have some of Gutierrez just in case the leg kicks bust him up and then we go from there. Yule was actually finished by, I think Marlon Vera finished him, and I think that was a relatively high scoring performance. So the way that they're going to be striking back and forth, if there is a finish here, it's going to score well. But my pick is going to be Gutierrez.
Right, next fight up. Ooh. Sorry, guys. Lost the screen I was working on. All right, there we go. Right. Next fight up is – oh, I skipped a fight. I totally skipped a fight. We need to circle back. I'm sorry, guys.
Sean, you're fired.
See, what did you skip?
Philip Rowe, 8,200.
Oh, yeah.
Green at 8,000, a very important GPP fight. Green is -140, so line value there. I think he'll be more popular. And my boy Phil Rowe is +120 to let you know where I'm going in this fight. By the way, fight does not go to decision, -165. It's funny. Gabe Green, this is because I teased it, I'll give my explanation. I think Gabe Green probably has the higher MMA ceiling in general. He's reckless right now. He's not disciplined. He's going to move forward. He's going to heavy pressure and he's going to throw. And, you know, I was talking to some other people about this, and yeah, guy's going to fight, fight free money, a little bit of line value. All that's great. When you're that sloppy, and I know that, you know, Philip Rowe isn't, you know, he was getting hurt by Leon Chabazian before he got a finish on the Contender Series. And you want to do MMA math, Gabe Green finished him relatively easily earlier in his career. My issue is just at this level, when you're reckless like that, you're going to get clipped. And I think now is probably the time. And it's a GPP fight only anyway. People are on the line value for on the Gabe Green side. So I get ownership, a sloppy fighter, mid-range fight, GPP fight. Yeah, give me the leverage. Give me Phil Rowe, just Gabe Green making a mistake as he charges in pretty recklessly as he does in all of his tape. And by the way, if Gabe Green catches Phil Rowe coming in, because Phil Rowe does start a little bit slow, won't surprise me at all. I don't want any tweets. Yeah, haha, you were wrong. I'm just – look, ownership and that reckless style, I'm taking the shot on Phil Rowe. Chris, who you got?
Well, I have my burner accounts ready in case that happens. So I'll be blocking.
Yeah. You know what? I won't say what I was going to say. I was going to say something really terrible.
Those creative names that I come up with, I'm sure you have a couple of them. But I pick Gabe Green here, but I agree with your strategy, Sean, because I think if you have a GPP fight where one guy is probably going to finish and the whole world's on the other side, well, then you should take a gander at the other one, because that's going to be a lot of points if that guy does finish. So I agree with that, and I will have my shares of Phil Rowe for that reason. But I like Green here. I think, as you mentioned,
you agree that he's defensively irresponsible.
I do, yeah. Not only on the feet, but also on the ground, he gets very manic. If you ever watched him on the regionals, he has some really good escapes, mount escapes, and he's actually fun to watch on the ground. But he gets very, very panicky, I think, and scrambly. And I think that with a long grappler, especially like Rowe, that could be a problem. We've seen how the length can affect grapplers and how they can control. But I think that the forward pressure is what was giving Rowe problems in that contender series fight. Gabe Green is going to be doing a lot of it in the smaller cage. He can get clipped on the way in, of course, with the length. But as soon as Green is on the inside, I love it, because taking away all that space is going to be important. I think that he's going to clip Phil Rowe. I think he might get him out of there early. We know how tough Gabe Green is. We saw it in the Danny Rodriguez fight. So even if he does get clipped, I don't think it's going to be as easy as, okay, I got hit once and now I'm out of the fight. I think he can rally. If he does get hit, and that's something you do like with a guy for your money. So, I'm on Green here, but heavy both sides are, and I think maybe get some more Rowe than you would have if the entire world's going to be on Green. But Green is my pick as well.
Joe.
Yeah, so how good of a stack would that have been if you stacked D-Rod and Gabe Green in their fight? I mean,
pretty bananas.
Oh my God, with the significant strikes. I that's the one thing that sticks out from that fight is, you know, the fact that it went the distance and Green was a short notice replacement and D-Rod could not put him away. So he's a tough guy. Look, this is a GPP fight. Like, I would love to buy into somebody with a lot of conviction on which way to go in this fight. So I honestly think the way to play it is to have equal shares or pretty much equal shares or, you know, deviate towards the line value. Otherwise, flip a coin. I mean, I guess I'll lean towards Rowe here, but I would play this fight pretty evenly on DraftKings, and I have no desire at all to bet it, although I do have a sneaking suspicion that it does not go the distance.
All right, next fight up. Now I got to scroll down to where I was, and we have, oh, good. All right, I'm good. Joe's up first. Mallory Martin, 8,600, taking on Pollyanna Viana at 7,600. A line on this fight, Mallory Martin is -145. Pollyanna Viana is +125. All right, Joe, I'm going to be quiet, and I'm going to listen to what you have to say, and then I'm going to make a reaction. Could be very loud based on if you agree, because I have a pretty strong stance on this fight.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the intangibles, right? So, you know, we've got Pollyanna Viana, who has just been a vacuum for favorite players. She is like just sucked up money for anybody who bet her when she was a favorite. You know, she comes back in her last fight and actually looks pretty good. Against Emily Whitmire, gets the first round armbar, trains at a really good Brazilian camp, kind of like on par with Nova Uniao, Tata Fight Team. So she's getting some good training. But prior to that Emily Whitmire armbar as a slight dog, she had three losses, and not exactly against the creme de la creme. Then you got Mallory Martin, who trains at Elevation Fight Team. Good camp. Not exactly lighting the UFC on fire either. I mean, if you look at her record, okay, Hannah Cyphers, although Cyphers had some moments in that fight, and then that loss against Jan Jaroba does not look that bad, considering that Jan Jaroba is really good and has proven to be really good. Prior to that, kind of beat some so-so fighters in Invicta. So what am I going to do here? Okay, so I think the better chance at a finish is by Viana. I also think there's line value on Viana. So my pick is Viana.
Boo! Boo this man! And shit. Chris,
well,
please save me.
I'm going to add to the chorus here. And as usual, I'm going to get booed from Sean, but I'm used to it. By now, I think that Viana is, look, you can say, oh, it was just Emily Whitmire. If you'd like to, that armbar transition was very quick and very pretty. And I can't get it. Look, I don't see how you can at least consider or not consider, I should say, Viana. I mean, Jandroba, look, she's probably better at jiu-jitsu than Pollyanna Viana is, but I just can't get past how many times and how easily she took Mallory Martin down. That really has to go through your head, I think, as you're looking at this fight. Now, the one thing is Pollyanna Viana doesn't go for takedowns a lot, only about 1.2 per 15. I think she should do it more often. And I'm just going to go back and put a finer point on the fact that Joe said that Hannah Seifert's had her moments. Hannah Seifert's had a really, really big moment, a knockdown that I think dropped her, and I think she was out for a second and came back. I mean, all credit to her for coming out in the second round and totally turning around the fight. One of the more impressive comebacks probably of the year that we don't talk about.
Yeah, performance of the night. Yep.
Yeah, unbelievable. But for this fight, I think that, look, I've always liked Viana is not much on the feet. I've always liked her range kicking
game. That's a big overstatement.
A big overstatement. But I have to say that I like her range kicking game. Her body kicks are good. And I just think that, look, Mallory Martin is probably going to throw herself into some clinch situations. I wouldn't doubt that at all. I think that she's such an amalgamation of things inside the cage. Like, she strikes and she wrestles and she this and she that. I think that she's going to tie. She might initiate some tie-ups here, which is good for me. I think, and I definitely agree with Joe that if there's going to be a finish, it's going to be Viana. I am picking Viana. I think she does get the sub here, and I am going to shield myself from the hail of boos that is sure to come.
Boo! Look, can Pollyanna Viana hit a submission? Yes. In my opinion, that is the only way she wins this fight. Look, you're going to compare the striking of Hannah Seifert to the striking of Pollyanna Viana, who I don't think could jab her way out of a wet paper bag. Like,
body kicks.
Her striking is horrendous. And you go on top, and you take that one step further. Could she end up in a clinch position? Could she end up on top? Pollyanna Viana is easy to take down a lot of times because she wants to be taken down. Relying on a submission off your back in the UFC, I mean, this is the best division to do it in. But you can see the men's fighters, as MMA has evolved, like those, you don't see people hitting submissions off their back very, very frequently. Like, it's not a good place to be. And with the addition of control time, if Mallory Martin just holds her up against the cage, lands a takedown and goes, oh shit, I don't want to be here, and just, you know, stays in guard, she's still scoring.
That's very specific, Sean. Very specific.
She has a path on the feet. I don't think Pollyanna is a terrible striker. I think she can have control time up against the cage and on the mat if she finds herself there, because Viana's just going to hunt for subs. And I don't like relying on the sub. Could Viana hit it and break the slate? Sure. It's a GPP play. I think it is a viable one. I'm not disagreeing with that. I just, again, I think less people are going to be on Martin. And I have paths on the feet, on the ground, in the clinch, because I do think she's physically stronger. I mean, for this price tag, sign me up, kind of. So for that reason, I'm on Mallory Martin. I'll be against the grain. I'll take the Chris Olsen role for this fight. Let's go to the next fight up, where I think everybody pretty much agree what's going to happen here, right? It's just a matter of scoring and price. Bilal Muhammad, 9,200, taking on Diego Lima at 7,000. Line on this fight, Muhammad is -470 now. Now the biggest favorite on the card. He's a bigger favorite than Rodolfo Vieira, who we've yet to talk about, who's more expensive. Comeback on Lima is +375. The issue is your fight goes to decision is -195, and the scoring has changed. You can't call him Mr. 86 anymore, but how else Bilal Muhammad going to score, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you see that he mixes in his wrestling a lot. He mixed the wrestling in a lot in the Jeff Neal fight. And a lot of those entries were pretty good. Jeff Neal just did a good job D'ing up a lot of that. I don't know that Diego Lima's anti-wrestling is quite as good, although I think it's gotten better. He D'd up a lot veteran. He just fought Carlos Condit. Well, not just, but
Diego.
Who did Diego Lima just fight? Yeah,
Luke Jamot.
No, before that,
Court McGee.
Yeah, he D'd up eight.
The only fight I watched this was Luke Jamot, and I went, "Who the? What are we talking about?
Yeah, he never fought Condit. I don't think. I don't think that one's coming up in the pike either. But
probably not.
I hope.
Yeah. Not. But, yeah, D'd up eight Court McGee takedowns. He's dealt with a lot of wrestlers in his career. He had to fight Yushin Okami. He had to fight Jesse Taylor. He's very used to people coming at his legs. I think Bilal Muhammad is a better wrestler than his takedown accuracy perhaps gives him credit for. But I also don't think you can rely on him getting a finish. I know he subbed out Takashi Sato in that win. I don't think – It's reliable, but I do like the regularity with which he was going for takedowns in that Jeff Neal fight. And so I think that could be something. It could also be the case that he's going to want to use the wrestling more here because he's going to be at quite the reach disadvantage. But it depends. I think Diego Lima's striking has gotten a lot better in this run in the UFC. I think he's a lot better at counterpunching now. Which has been a problem for Bilal Muhammad in the past. Not to say that I think that Diego Lima wins because I don't, but it's an interesting fight to me. Interesting to see what path Bilal Muhammad takes. I think he can do an accumulation, get a pretty decent cashy score if he decides to wrestle a lot, but we'll have to see. But I do think the pick for the fight is Bilal Muhammad.
Joe?
Bilal Muhammad. There's not a whole lot of analysis. I mean, this is a fight.
How much are you playing Bilal Muhammad versus the other guys in the 9K range?
Not a lot. I think he's a much better wager than he is a DraftKings play.
Even at minus 470?
Yeah, I think he's going to be – well, I mean, there are other ways you can maybe like look at the decision prop or maybe even go for a finish prop because I could certainly see him finishing Lima. But – again, that would obviously make him a good DraftKings play. It's kind of counterintuitive to what I just said. But, yeah, I like Bilal Muhammad here. I just don't know how many points he's going to score. I don't think he's ever scored 100 points in a UFC fight.
Even the new scoring system he has.
Oh, are you sure? Because
under the new scoring system.
Because the new scoring system is in the fighter bios on DraftKings.
I thought I saw it last night.
Take a look. I don't think I saw him ever score 100 points.
Look. Oh, you're right. No, yep. Yes. One time, 103.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't think you need to do a lot of analysis here. I don't know why he didn't get a better opponent, but it is what it is. This is who he's fighting. Okay. I'll take Bilal Muhammad here. I don't know. I don't know how much of this I'll have on DraftKings. Again, now with only 11 fights, you're going to have a lot more, especially if you're maxing, than you would normally have of this fight. So, I think it's kind of an interesting play because I don't know how owned he would be normally, but we'll see.
Yeah, I do agree. It's an interesting GPP play, and that is a very hot take from our boy Non Bilal, top score in the slate. Holy
wow, that is a hot take.
Holy bleeping bleep, if that is your actual hot take. We'll get the hot takes later. I don't think we should have any here. Rodolfo Vieira, 9,300, taking on Anthony Fluffy Hernandez, 6,900. Line in this fight I just referenced. Vieira is minus 400. Comeback on Hernandez, plus 325. Horrific stylistic matchup for Anthony Hernandez. Joe, how much Vieira can we fit in at 9,300?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Hernandez's only hope here is that Fluffy's only hope is that Vieira gets tired. You know, that's really the only way I could see this happening because Vieira is immediately going to go for the clinch, right? He'll get it to the ground, especially while they're still dry. He's going to be the highest owned fighter in that range, you know, which is interesting for a guy that's pretty one-dimensional in how he fights. It's just like, I don't understand the matchmaking here. I'm not sure I understand why Vieira is getting matched up against Fluffy Hernandez. The matchmaking makes no sense. He's going to be the highest owned fighter, at least, especially in that price point, if not on the whole slate. So, Vieira, what else is there to say?
Chris?
Well, let me give you a 20-minute dissertation. No.
I will disconnect this call, sir.
No. Vieira is going to win. This is, as Sean said, this is a particularly bad matchup just because Hernandez looks to get into clinches. That's sort of how he fights. He crashes the pocket with strikes, and he always ends up clinching his opponents. And Rodolfo Vieira is actually a really – I won't say really, but he's a pretty good wrestler for a jiu-jitsu-only guy. He actually knows what a double leg is. He doesn't just rely on, clinch takedowns.
Side coming. He actually knows what a double leg is.
Yeah, no, that's a high compliment for a jiu-jitsu-only guy. He's really strong. We've already seen him fight into a second round in his UFC debut against Oscar Pejoda, which actually was his toughest fight by matchup. So I agree. I don't know what these matchups are recently, but we also know he's a tough guy. I mean, he basically got his eye blown up in his last fight against Saberbek Safarov, to the point where I think if that went past the first round, Safarov would have won because they would have stopped.
That fight was not getting past the first round.
So that's fascinating. But yeah, he got it done. And the cherry on top of the sundae here is we saw a pretty strong grappler in Marcus Perez take Anthony Hernandez down and arm triangle him. And Vieira is much stronger and much better at jiu-jitsu. So you have to take Vieira. I think he probably gets a stun in round one just based on how Hernandez fights. So, yeah, I'm going to have quite a bit, even at the elevated price tag.
So who you got?
Who do I have?
Wait.
Pretty sure Joe went already.
Oh, you did?
I did. Yeah. Really? Oh, yeah. I'm confused. I didn't know if he wanted me to change my pick or not.
I meant to say, what do you got? I didn't realize you already gone. I mixed up the order in my head.
John wants to keep talking about this fight.
Yeah. Right? Let's go on to. All right. Let's get on to, I think, my hot take of the card. Julia Marquez, 8,700, taking on Maki Bartolo at 7,500. I don't know how hot of a take it is. I should rephrase my dog pick of the card. Marquez minus 162, Bartolo plus 152. Money is coming into Marquez, which I think is interesting. Fight doesn't go to decision, minus 165. Should play this in GPPs. Look, who said this? I took it from someone, and I want to give credit. Oh, God. It might have been Newsom. And if it's not Newsom, I apologize to whoever it is that Maki Bartolo has fought six times since Julian Marquez last fought. That's an issue. And Marquez coming off of a really serious injury where his career might have been over. I think ring rust is a thing. Like, there's two guys who are going to stand and trade. They're both super hittable. I think Marquez is probably even more hittable. I think Marquez probably has a little more pop. They're both tough dudes. Give me the underdog in a high variance GPP fight. I worry about all the intangibles on Marquez's side. If this fight was 2 years ago, I'd be taking Marquez all day. It's not. It's just not the world we live in. I think Maki Bartolo, obviously a super live dog who I'm going to give the slight nod to. All right. Now, Joe, who you got?
Okay. So obviously there's some narrative around why Marquez hasn't fought. It would not have surprised me if his career was over based on the injuries he's had, like serious, serious back injuries. Okay, ring rust here. Like six times your opponents fought. I see this fight is finishing inside the distance. I think you should have exposure to it in GPPs. But because of the narrative, I am going to lean to the dog here. I think there's some value. It's hard for me to get behind a guy, who hasn't fought, since Crocs were cool. It's really tough. So I'll have some shares of Marquez, but I am going to pick Coconut Bombs at a dog price for the win.
All right, Joe, we can be friends again.
Okay, there you go.
Chris, who you got?
So once again, I understand the strategy. Same principle as the Gabe Green fight. If you have a high variance GPP and you think everybody's going to be on one side, go to the other one. But I'm going to take
I think Patolo's higher owned than Marquez, by the way.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It's not exactly the same thing. But just I understand the play in any case. But I am actually going to go then on what may be the less frequent side here, which is Marquez, just because the physicality of Pitolo always scares me. I think pretty much everybody's stronger than him in this division. I think he can get muscled around. He can get choked. And it's interesting too, because Julian Marquez only has one sub on his record, but he loves to pull your head down and go for those chokes. The guillotine chokes that he tries, he got the front choke on Darren Stewart. Granted, that was when they were both pretty tired in that third round. But I think that's an issue too here, because I think that Marquez is going to be able to muscle him around. And we know that Marquez likes to march his opponents down. I think that Pitolo is the better striker. I like a lot about him. I like that, you know, he goes body head. He does a lot of lateral movement, all this stuff. I just don't know that his power is going to play, especially against a guy like Marquez. And I think Marquez is definitely going to be stronger. So I have to go with that here. So pick is Marquez, have both sides, but I think Marquez gets the finish here.
All right, next fight up, Kelvin Gastelum, 8,800, taking on Ian Heinisch at 7,400. A line on this fight, Kelvin Gastelum is -210, Heinisch is +190. I think really we're just talking about, is Kelvin Gastelum shot, or are we really that high on Ian Heinisch? I'm not. Chris, how about you?
I'm not either. I think that Kelvin Gastelum, look, there's just been a lot of first of all, he's had a couple of weird fights. First, what am I even saying here? Start over. First of all, he's had a couple of weird opponents coming back. He had the Jack Hermanson fight, in which he just got, you know, heel hooked, which is not a common occurrence. I don't expect anything like that to happen again. And the Darren Till fight, it's just a guy with a weird long frame. And I could see him struggling to strike with a guy like that. The bottom line is he's still got really fast hands. He's going to be the man with the faster hands. He's going to be the man who's the better boxer. I think a lot of Ian Heinisch's game flows from his wrestling. And if he can't get it, I think that he's going to struggle. I don't think Kelvin Gastelum is an easy takedown generally, not barring what happened in his last fight. But yeah, I just think that Heinisch doesn't have as much of a layered striking game. I think that's going to hurt him here. I don't really see this being a high-scoring DK fight, though. I think it's just going to sort of be a slog as it goes. I mean, unless Kelvin Gastelum catches him, but Ian Heinisch is a very durable, very tough guy. I expect this to be a kind of a nip and tuck fight where Gastelum just lands the better shots and then takes the decision. So I'm going to go Gastelum here, but I'm probably going to fade a lot on DK and other DFS sites.
Joe, how about you?
I think Gastelum is a really solid bet here. I really like him a lot in this spot. I think obviously this is as soft a competition as he's fought. I don't know how that's going to translate to DraftKings. Was refreshed by memory. Was Mearshart a favorite against Heinisch when they fought? I can't recall what the odds were on that fight.
I guess it would have been close. I don't know.
Heinisch was a -140 favorite.
Okay, -140.
It closed -160 for Heinisch.
Okay. Yeah, I think, look, I honestly, and you guys feel free to agree or disagree, I think Kelvin might be fighting for his roster spot here. I mean, you know, this is as soft of a matchup as they've actually given him. So I see him winning a fairly dominant decision. I don't know if he puts Heinisch away. I think that he could. I like him a lot as a wager. Again, how I'm going to use him in DraftKings, again, I'm going to have to use him a lot more than I might have. And I know this is a recurring theme of mine, but with 11 fights, you can't really afford to have too many holes in terms of like leaving guys out of your lineups, especially if you're spreading in mass entry. So I like Kelvin here. I like him a fair amount. I'm going to use him in DraftKings. I just don't know how, but I really do like him as a wager.
I pretty much agree with everything Joe said. I don't think he's fighting for his roster spot, although it kind of depends how much money he's making, quite honestly. But otherwise, totally in line with what these guys have for a fight breakdown. Co-main event time. Alexa Grasso, 8,300, taking on Macy Barber at 7,900. Line on this fight, Grasso minus 117. The comeback on Barber plus 107. Should be a fun one. I think this is actually going to score decent, which I think is a hot take in of itself. Just the way Macy Barber fights, there's going to be a lot of volume in this fight. It's boxer versus kickboxer, but I actually favor the boxer and Grasso because can Macy Barber move her head off the center line? I'm not entirely sure. And I was really high on her. The more I go back and watch, like, she's standing in front and just throwing at people. That's not going to fly here against Alexa Grasso, in my opinion. You also got the intangibles of the ACL injury. Yeah, it's been a year. She should be fine. Losing to Roxanne Modafari. Modafari had some success on the feet in that fight, which was stupid. So Joe shaking his head. I lean towards Alexa Grasso in this one. I think regardless, I think people are going to not play as much of this fight as they should. I actually think this one scores better than most women's MMA fights, especially striking-based fights. Joe, who do you have?
So I'm shaking my head because I don't understand where the love for Barbara is coming from.
Yes, he's on my side.
I mean,
guys.
You know, like, so look, with all due respect, Cody Safrick, you are my boy. I dream of doing a show with you someday, but like, trying to talk my boy up, Paul Shaughnessy, off of you know, putting a play down on Grasso. No. Watch film. I mean, let's forget about the fact that she's coming off of a pretty serious injury, where she got taken down and dominated by Roxanne Modafari. Look at Grasso's last fights. Look at how good a striker she is. I mean, you know, Macy Barber, even when she finished Jillian Robinson, there was nothing technical about that performance. She just muscled her up and swung wildly, right? Now, okay, yeah, maybe she's made some improvements. It's not like I've watched her most recent sparring sessions, but I was impressed with the way Grasso has fought her last couple fights. She's such a technical fighter. I literally see her piecing up Macy Barber here. I don't know how this is going to translate to DraftKings, but I will be, and thank you for all those guys out there. And this could be the biggest pork chop that I eat on the entire card, because there is a lot of love. Like, I'm hearing love on Cirrus, on the Cirrus sports channels, like guys who are coming on who do their MMA minutes, who are touting Macy Barber as a parlay piece with Kamaru Usman. Please continue doing that. Drive this number down even further. I was happy at 134. I'm certainly happy at 127. And if this line even comes close to flipping, I'm going to really invest some serious money in this fight on just straight up betting. So I think Grasso could win this fight wherever it goes. Right, that's what's going to happen there, Ryan Barton. Grasso is going to piece her up standing. Look, the sun even shines on the back of a dog's ass on occasion. So Barbara could certainly come out there flailing and hit her with something. But remember, this is her first fight back coming off an injury. And she is going up against a far more technical striker and pure boxer in Grasso. So give me Grasso all day here. This is one of my most confident picks, perhaps outside of Bilal and Usman on the entire slate. But again, I don't know how that is going to translate to DraftKings. She does not offer a line value, not the way the line has been moving towards Macy Barber. Could be a really good punt play, because I'm guessing she's going to be pretty low owned, even on an 11 fight card. She's going to be the DraftKings favorite and could potentially be a betting line dog, which is never a good sign for ownership. So I may have some shares of her for that reason, but I do really like Grasso a lot here. Give me Grasso all day long and twice on Sunday.
Chris.
Well, it's dinner time, Joe, because I think that Macy Barber. Look, I agree with what you say that obviously Grasso is the better striker, right? But I'm just sort of confused that, like, obviously, you know, you don't need to be technical to win fights. The way that she's gonna win it is the way that you kind of joked that she would do. She's gonna muscle her around. She's gonna be the stronger fighter, and she's gonna trap her against the cage and clinch her up and rough her up, just sort of like how, we have a prologue for this fight. We can just look at, now, obviously, they're not exactly the same fighter, but Grasso already beat a boxer in whose name I forgot now that I decided to bring her up. But who's the boxer?
That Grasso beat or the Barber beat?
That Barber beat. Beat JJ Ulrich.
wait. Fucking wait. You are comparing Alexa Grasso's boxing to JJ Aldridge's boxing? Get out of here.
Wait, you don't think Aldridge is a good boxer?
Not in Grasso's league.
Not in the way Grasso is.
I agree that Grasso's better. I don't think they're worlds apart.
You gotta watch her recent fight. You gotta watch her last fight.
I watch every fight, sir.
How impressive she looked.
She looked great in the Ji Young Kim fight. I don't know.
I thought she looked really good.
But I mean, she got hit quite a bit. But anyway, I think she's going to be stronger. I also think, as I said, as we brought up in the Anthony Hernandez fight, I think she's going to throw herself into some clinch situations. I think she does that fairly regularly, and I think it's going to hurt her here. I just think she's going to be able to be marched down. Obviously, she's going to be the better striker. She's going to piece her up on the feet if it stays there. But I don't know. I just think that, you know, the turn against Barber is kind of odd here. She lost one fight in which she tore up her knee. And before that happened, she was kind of out scrambling, or at least keeping up in the scrambles, let's say that, with Roxy on the ground. So I wouldn't you say that she can win this fight wherever it goes? I think Barber would have her way on the ground if it went there. But I think that, look, am I going to be surprised if she gets pieced up by Grasso? No, I'm not. But Barber's tough. I mean, she's not just flash in the pan. As I said, she lost that first round handily to J.J. Aldridge, came back and turned the screws. And I think even if she has a bad round here, she'll be able to do the same thing. The time off is concerning, of course, especially given that it's off of a major injury. But look, she's 22. I mean, I would expect her to bounce back pretty okay, you know, from an injury like that. I don't think we have to worry about anything lingering too bad here. I think that if people are off Barber because they just don't like the way she looks I think attitude, frankly, has some play in this to why people don't like her, which is fine. I say bring that on, because I will take all the Barber, Joe will take all the Grasso, and we'll see where the chips fall.
And I have no issue with her attitude, just FYI.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying, you know.
No, I know there is some of that. I agree.
That tends to permeate for some reason.
Yep.
All right, main event time. Kamaru Usman, 9,000, taking on Gilbert Burns at 7,200. The line on this fight is currently Usman's -260, Burns is +240. Look, I personally freaking hate when training partners fight. I hate it. I immediately and forever now will think of Devontae Smith and Kama Worthy every time. Like, it's just crazy shit happens. What's the other one that comes to mind? It's an older one. Mike Pyle, Matt Brown. Like, everyone said that Mike Pyle used to beat up Matt Brown in the gym. Go watch their UFC fight. Doesn't look like that. Now, that, and you could talk about Burns' BJJ, you know, live to a submission. We're just looking for ways for Usman to lose. It seems so unlikely. We're just poking holes in it. And I've done it too. And I'll like, that's what everyone is doing. You're looking for ways for the best welterweight on the planet to lose. The way he loses is that you would think, and it's hard to know for sure, you would think he's going to want to try and box Burns. And there's no way Burns is getting Usman down. So maybe Burns lands something on the feet, it's MMA, and Usman shoots a reactive shot, and this fight goes to the ground, and he finds a submission. That's probably the way that Burns wins the fight. Or he catches them on the feet, because while Usman's, I think, technically a better boxer, you know, they're 4-ounce gloves, we're throwing leather, anything can happen. But skill-wise, the wrestling, and I think if you really wanted to, Usman could probably take Burns down, and just, he's got heavy enough top pressure that, you know, he knows what subs to look out for. He'll probably be fine. It's interesting to see what he chooses to do. And he's the one who knows, because they've trained together. Is it safer for him to just dominate Burns on top and not worry about the sub? Or is he not really worried about him on the feet and just going to box him up? It's hard to know for sure. You have 5 rounds to work with. Give me Kamaru Usman. It's not an all-in fight because if they play at range for five rounds, there's a chance he doesn't end up on the optimal when you have Ricky Simone up there and Rodolfo Vieira, who I think is live to an under-minute bonus. Like, there's ways Usman doesn't end up on the optimal, but all the narrative we're talking about is just looking for ways for Usman to somehow lose. So Usman's the pick here. It's just a matter of scoring. I think he'll be fine. Just a couple shots on Burns, but he'll go over own because he's in the main event. Chris, who you got?
By the way, you want to talk about scores that are better because of the new system.
Jesus Christ. I meant to do that.
Usman tilts the pinball machine. I think that his score against
195.
Yeah, it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. Something like, 250 regular strikes. It's just absurd. So on to the fight. I think that, I've seen some narrative floating around, and you kind of touched on it, Sean, that this is just going to be a range striking battle, maybe because Usman doesn't want to take him down. I think if that does happen, that's actually dangerous for Usman. Colby Covington hit him a lot, like more than Colby Covington should be able to hit you. So if Gilbert Burns hits him that much, Gilbert Burns hits a lot harder than Colby Covington. And I don't really think it's a game he wants to play. And I think that can lead to him getting clipped. I will say that as far as a fundamental boxer, Usman is better. He's gotten very good. And when you force Usman to react to you, he sometimes lunges and can get caught like that as well. But yeah, I do think Usman's going to take him down here. And I also think that the clock is working against Gilbert Burns here. In that Alexei Kunchenko fight, he was dead tired by the third round and basically just survived to win the decision because he had won the first two rounds. And if you look at his fights, he's never really been forced to push a pace. He's always been the guy either pushing the pace or, frankly, just being in there with slower fighters. I mentioned Kunchenko. He fought the tortoise himself, Tyron Woodley. So it's been a very – he's been able to fight very methodical, very slow fights. And as we just said, Usman really pushes the pace no matter what he's doing. Grappling, striking, on the ground, he never lets you rest. So I think that not only is Usman a big favorite skill-wise, but Gilbert Burns has a half-life to land that big shot because Usman's constantly going to be pushing him, and I think Gilbert Burns is going to get tired. And if that happens, this can just get really, really bad for him very quickly. Could lead to a finish. Otherwise, I think it's just going to be a volume win, but I do think he scores very highly. So it's a Hail Mary for Gilbert Burns, but I don't even see the Hail Mary as that likely, quite frankly. I think that Usman all the way, and I'll have a lot of him in DraftKings.
So the highest owned fighter on the slate, and the linchpin of cash lineups, Kamaru Usman. I actually like the camp shift. I like the fact that he trained at Elevation. I liked some of the new coaching he's getting. I'm thinking about a way to play this. Honestly, straight up is not awful, considering my level of confidence in the outcome. I may look to do something with Grasso, by way of a parlay and Vieira to win by submission, something along those lines, to get a little bit of juice. So I like look, Chris did a really thorough analysis, and that's typically not, fight game planning a fight is not generally how I do my analysis, but Chris did a really sharp job there. So thank you for that. I'm just going to kind of piggyback off of, his take on that. I love Usman as well. I'm going to be playing him. I'm going to be on DraftKings. I'm trying to figure out the best way to bet him. I will have a few shares of Burns. Again, sun even shines on the dog's ass on occasion, just in case. But I really would be very surprised if Burns was able to get anything done against Kamaru.
All right, guys, it is time for hot takes. Something unexpected. You think will happen, DFS, could be betting related, whatever you got, hit us up in chat, read a couple out. Joe, you're usually locked and loaded. What do you got for a hot take?
So I was looking while you guys were talking, and I was looking at some odds plays. Unfortunately, there is not a line to win by Dr. Stoppage. So I am going to play. I'm going to play Grasso to win in round three at 20-1. So 20-1, Grasso wins in round three. You know, now also there's a Grasso wins inside the distance, which is obviously, you know, not as good. I think that's 6-1, and maybe I'll put a little bit on that. But like round three, I see her piecing Barbara up to the point where, you know, either the referee or the doctor stopped the fight. So I'm going to say that happens in round three. So I will take, look, not a large taste, and don't bet your mortgage on it, but a few ducats on Grasso to win in round three at 20-1. God bless you, Sean. That's my hot take.
Thank you. Sorry, guys.
Yep.
Sorry, couldn't hit mute in time. Yep. Chris, who you got? What do you got?
You got to get quicker on the cough button there. But I am going to take – I know this is the only way she wins, but I think it's still like a plus 350 or something, so I consider that sufficiently hot. I'm going to take Viana by submission. And before we move on here
– I don't think it's that big of a line. I really don't.
No, it is. It is.
Her only way to win this fight. Where is it?
Pollyanna, I like it, Chris. Viana.
I know you like it, Joe. You guys are breaking my heart. It's gonna be it's gonna cost me some money. Come tomorrow night. Viana inside the distance. Viana inside the distance is plus 305. So I imagine by submission is. Yeah. All right, so 385 plus 385.
Yeah, everybody look there alive there. Look, if you have somebody, the only way they win is doing that, and then you get that price, you know, I don't know.
Sure. I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. My hot take will be... I want to throw out something really spicy, but I don't know if I have the balls for it. Let's go with... No, that's not a hot take. Maki Patolo is not a hot take. He's just not. How about... And I want to go directly against Chris. That's no fun.
It's not? That's the most fun for me.
Ready? Phil Rowe is going to score the 60-second bonus.
Wow.
There you go.
We had two of them last week, so...
I know. I hate it. And It's right there in possibility that Gabe Green scores it for himself. He's so defensively irresponsible. I hate it. Yep. In chat, what we got real quick before we get out of here. Heinisch Grasso Burns Coco Bombs plus 8,004. Woo, buddy.
Wow, Tajik Bey, that's a hot take. Kamara will not be in the winning lineup.
Burns. Okay. That's why it was so high. Yep. Pop that back up. Tajik Kamaru will not be in the winning lineup in the main GPP. Hot take, not unrealistic. I laid out the reasons why during that breakdown. We'll go to Ryan real quick. Nothing real spicy. Heinisch out hustles Kelvin. Kelvin could be shot. Sure. Shot. Not hot. Shot.
Shot.
I bet Grasso a few weeks ago at minus 150.
That's all right, Ryan. You could get a little bit more.
Should have waited on him. Yeah, all right, guys, that's what we got.
Sorry, yep. Before we go, so I'm going to really quick throw in some shameless plugs here. We actually got two new members of our RotoWire MMA family. They are now not only in betting picks, but they also have great articles for you to check out. That's AJ Shulo and Cole Shelton. So check that out, guys. I have a new article up where I not only take a look at DraftKings plays, but I do a little bit of everything. DraftKings, bets, FanDuel, Monkey Knife Fight, Super Draft. We get into all kinds of different things, and we see where all the best plays are, and it's really a lot of fun. So check all that out, guys. And
by the way, guys, I know AJ, and he does some solid work, and I believe the article he's doing for RotoWire is FanDuel. And I may actually just have to play. I haven't played FanDuel since like they launched there maybe one time. And I may have to play a little FanDuel and see how AJ does. But he get on his mailing list because he really sends out some solid write-ups. And unlike, I believe, everybody on this call, AJ actually makes his living wagering. So that should tell you something right there. So I look, no disrespect to Cole. I don't know who that is. maybe someday. But I do know AJ, and definitely check out his FanDuel article and get on his mailing list and follow AJ.
All right, guys, that's it for UFC 258. Make sure you go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. Like, comment, subscribe to the podcast wherever you were watching or listening at the moment. I am the Daily Fantasy Sniper for Chris Olsen and Joe, better known as Sun Tzu. Good luck in your contest, guys. We'll see you for UFC 259.
Peace.